ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयम् उदीरये। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8. Lord Krishna shows the universal form. We're taking up at text number 5. Jyotisham ayanam saksha yattaj jnanam atindriyam pranitam bhavata hina uman veda paravaram Jyotisham. Knowledge of astrology. Along with other aspects of culture in human society. And specifically in civilized society. There must be knowledge of astrology. Ayanam. The movements of the stars and planets. In relationship to human society. Sakshat, directly. Yattad jnanam, such knowledge. Uti indriyam, which an ordinary person cannot understand, because it is beyond his vision. Pranitam bhavata, you have prepared a perfect book of knowledge. Yena, by which, Uman, any person, Veda, can understand, Para Avaram, the cause and effect of destiny. Translation, O great saintly person, you have compiled the astrological knowledge by which one can understand past and present unseen things. By the strength of this knowledge, any human being can understand what he has done in his past life and how it affects his present life. This is known to you. Please repeat. O great saintly person, you have compiled the astrological knowledge by which one can understand
past and present unseen things.
By the strength of this knowledge, any human being can understand what he has done in his past life and how it affects his present life. This is known to you. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. The word destiny is now defined. Unintelligent persons who do not understand the meaning of life are just like animals. Animals do not know the past, present, and future life, nor are they able to understand it. But a human being can understand this, if he is sober. Therefore, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.13, Hiras tatranda muhiti. A sober person is not bewildered. The simple truth is that although life is eternal, in this material world, one changes from one body to another. Foolish people, especially in this age, do not understand this simple truth. Krishna says, Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yovanam jura tatha dehantara praptir hiras tatrahna huyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita 2.13. Krishna, the greatest authority, says that the body will change. And as soon as the body changes, one's whole program of work changes also. Today I am a human being or a great personality, but with a little deviation from nature's law, I shall have to accept a different type of body. Today I am a human being, but tomorrow I may become a dog. And then whatever activities I have performed in this life will be a failure. This simple truth is now rarely understood, but one who is dhira can understand this. Those in this material world for material enjoyment should know that because their present position will cease to exist, they must be careful in how they act. This is also stated by Rishabhadeva, Nasada manye yata atmano yam asan apikleshada asadeha. Although this body is temporary, as long as we have to live in this body, we must suffer. Whether one has a short life or a long life, one must suffer the threefold miseries of material life. Therefore, any gentleman, Tira, must be interested in Jyotish, astrology. Nanda Maharaj was trying to take advantage of the opportunity afforded by Gargamuni's presence. For Gargamuni was a great authority in this knowledge of astrology, by which one can see the unseen events of past, present, and future. It is the duty of a father to understand the astrological position of his children and do what is needed for their happiness. Now, taking advantage of the opportunity afforded by the presence of Gargamuni, Nanda Maharaj suggested that Gargamuni prepare a horoscope for Nanda's two sons, Krishna and Balaram. Jyotisham ayanam sakshad yatajjnanam atindriyam pranitam bhavatayena puman veda paravaram. O great saintly person, you have compiled the astrological knowledge by which one can understand past and present unseen things. By the strength of this knowledge, any human being can understand what he has done in his past life and how it affects his present life. This is known to you. So the word destiny can be a little scary, because anyone who's in this material world doesn't know exactly what that will be. Just one will know that practically it's intractable. Whatever comes in the form of destiny means that I have to accept it, whether I like it or not. This is expressed in a story in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Narada Muni recounts an incident that took place many, many years ago. The demigods and the demons are constantly fighting. The demigods had won victory over the demons. And the demons, being distraught, then took shelter of the great technologist and IT specialist, Maya Danava. He was a kind of a mystical wizard with the material energy. He had so much power that he could create magical things. So he made a pond of nectar. The demigods were fighting against the demons, and Maya Danava gave them these three cities in the air. They were like airplanes that were invisible. One was made out of gold, another out of silver, another out of copper. And now Maya Danava installed within each one of them a pond, so that the demons would be brought back to life whenever they were killed by the demigods. So then they began fighting, and the demigods went to Lord Shiva and asked for his help. So as he began fighting against the demons, every time one was killed, Maya Danava would drop the demon into this well of nectar. And they would come back stronger than before. Seeing that Lord Shiva was in distress, Lord Vishnu then came as a cow, and he brought Lord Brahma as a calf. And they walked into the cities that Maya Danava had created. And they went to the well of nectar, and they began drinking all the nectar. The demons were helpless because of the influence of the energy of Lord Vishnu. They were held back. And Maya Danava, observing the whole incident, uttered these words, Devo suru naronyo va neshwarosti hakashchana atmanyeva mana dvayano paino dvayum. That whether one's a demigod, a demon, a human being, or anyone else, one cannot undo what has been destined for oneself, for others, or for both oneself and others, whether one be a demigod, a demon, a human being, or anyone else. Once the Lord has decided to do something, that will be enacted and can't be changed. So we can probably relate to this idea that something comes in our life that is providential, can't be undone, can simply stand there and watch. So this is the existential condition of the living entity in the material world that Arjuna asks about in the beginning of the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is attaining the supreme. He's asking Krishna, what is the living entity and what's his relationship with the material nature? And Krishna answers, Aksharam Brahma Paramam Sabhava Dhyatma Uchite. Bhuta Bhavad Baba Sargo Vikarma Sargak Samjita, that the nature of the living entity, Subhava Dhyatma Mujite, the Subhava of every living entity, is that it's eternal. But the material nature, Aksharam Brahma Paramam, Subhava Dhyatma Mujite, Bhuta Bhava, it's the material nature is constantly being created and destroyed, it's always moving, whereas the living entity isn't. However, the living entity is a little creator, Visarga. He's able, the living entity, because of the force of his own consciousness, within a small context, he's able to create his own situation to some degree. Bhuta bhavad bhavakara karma. That whatever way he shapes his consciousness will develop his external situation. And therefore, Krishna goes on to say, Antakali chamameva smaran mukva kalevaram yaprayati samadbhavam yati nasyat shamshayaha. That one should be aware of this fact, that you're creating your own future by your activities now because of your development of consciousness. Then he says, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaita kunteya sadartad bhava bhavita. Whatever kind of consciousness you've developed throughout this lifetime will determine at the time that you leave the body, your next body. That will be your destiny. And then in the 15th chapter, Krishna gives a sequence of verses in which he describes what happens. First he says, Shariram yaravapnoti yachchap yukramatishvara grihitvaitani samyati vayur gandang vashaya. And he says that the living entity, just like the air, which is moving and which passes over various substances, picks up the fragrance of those substances. And therefore, when you detect the air, you detect the smell within the air. So the living entity, according to his association in the material world, picks up a certain kind of consciousness, a flavor of consciousness, which Prabhupada refers to in this verse when he describes the living entity's plight within the material world. And that is that the consciousness becomes colored It's tinged. This is called upadi. Upadi is described by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti of Samri Sindhu with the analogy of a crystal, which is pure and which has a clear color. But if you put a red rose right next to the crystal, then the crystal becomes what?
Red.
Is the crystal red?
No.
Not really, but does it appear red? Yes, so living energy, when associating with the modes of material nature, appears to pick up those modes in nature. Factually, says the Vedas, asangokhyayam purushaha, the living entity never has any association with the material nature. But he appears to because he extends his consciousness into the material nature and becomes mixed up with it, and therefore appears to be a cat, a dog, a human being, a man, a woman. And these are all upadis. They're external designations because of one associating oneself with the three modes of material nature. But Krishna confirms in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, living entity is never actually liberated from material nature because he was never actually connected to it in the first place. We only extend ourselves here and become attached to it, and therefore we have this idea that I'm a man, woman, something else. So Krishna compares this to the air passing over various substances. And then he says, shariram yaravatnoti. He says, shotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam granam evacha atishtayam manaschayam vishayan upasevate. When it comes to carrying your consciousness and a flavor of the three modes of material nature, then material nature accommodates the living entity's particular desire to enjoy the material world in a certain way. And he gets shotram, an ear, shotram chakshu, sparshanam cha, rasanam, granam eva cha. He's describing these various senses we have. Please notice that you have senses for a minute. Are you noticing? They're all grouped about the head, mostly. You got eyes, ears. Kind of take it for granted usually, right? That you have ears. Right? But if you look at them long enough, you'll start noticing they're like little satellite dishes that pick up sounds. The eyes are their lenses, the tongue, mouth. And every living entity gets a certain set of senses according to the consciousness that he or she has developed in the past life. So then, a Krishna says, ukramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam vagunan vitam vimuna vimudho nane paschanti paschanti jnana chakshusha. That if a person becomes trained in knowledge, the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, then such a person can understand what's taking place and why it's taking place, can see the movements of the material nature and understand. Ukramantam means, actually, krama means to step. So Krishna is describing death here. This change of body is stepping out of the present body. Utkrama. Utkrama means you stepped out. Where is he? He stepped out. Ukramantam stitam vapi. He was situated in the body, but now he stepped out. Bhunjanam bhagunan vitam. Vimudha nanupashanti. If a person's vimudha, very foolish, then na anupashanti, he can't see what's taking place. But paschanti jnana chakshusha, if one's eyes, Krishna says, are trained in knowledge, he can see what's happening. If you're ever with somebody who's leaving their body, because you've been trained in the science of Bhagavad Gita, you can see very clearly what's going on. A living entity suddenly steps out and goes, okay, he's not here anymore. Foolish people don't know this, and therefore they become enamored of the body, and then when the soul leaves the body, they can't understand what just happened. They become bewildered. This is something that Hiranyakashipu explained to his relatives after the death of Hiranyaka. He was trying to appease them because when somebody leaves their body in the family, everyone becomes distraught. And Hiranyakashipu then told a story about a great king, Suyagya. And this king had won many battles. And in his final battle, he was slain. And when they found his body after the battle, he had bitten his lip to show his valor going into the death throes. His limbs were broken and he was cut in various places. And the wives of the king came and they surrounded him and they were clutching his body and they were wailing. Yamaraj heard this wailing and therefore he appeared on the battlefield as a little boy to teach them a lesson. So he approached and he said, "Why are you crying?" And they said, "Our husband, the king, is gone." He said, "Excuse me, but he's not gone, he's right there." And they said, "No, you don't understand, little boy." And he said, "No, you don't understand. All this time you've been interacting with the king, and now you say he's gone, but he's right there. He has the same eyes, the same ears, the same nose, everything's same, so how can you say he's gone?" He said, "My conclusion is that you never saw the king. You thought you saw, but you never saw. This is ignorance." As a little boy, he educated them the science of the soul. But everyone's bewildered by this idea that I am the body. Vimuta nanu pashyanti, and therefore they can't see what's taking place. So Krishna says, yatanto yoginash chayanam, that the yogis, yatanto yoginash chayanam pashyantyatman, they can see what's happening. But if a person's not trained in this science, in this knowledge, then they can't understand what's taking place. So, in this verse, we're hearing about the importance of understanding the movements of material nature. This idea of jyotish means that you can look into your destiny according to the movements of the planets and how they will influence you in this lifetime. Someone who's very expert at the science can look and tell you the various trends that you'll experience in your life. And what will they look like when you look at your astrological chart? This I can guarantee you, that there will be some ups and downs. Everyone wants to look at their chart and say, like, "I want it to be all up." But it doesn't ever happen. Because you look at the chart, and in this period of your life, these kinds of fortuitous events will come. And at other times, during this period, it's going to be a slog getting through these next 7 years. You'll be influenced by Saturn. Shani will appear and everything will slow down. You won't have success in business. You might as well not get married, otherwise you'll suffer. There's so many reversals and so-called points of good fortune within anyone's chart here in this world. And this is the nature of associating with the three modes of material nature, which Krishna says in the 14th chapter of the Gita, is always churning, because all the modes are fighting for supremacy. And even if one's situated within the mode of goodness in the material world, it's sure to be overthrown by the rajas and tamasic modes. Just as the demigods who are in the heavenly planets and enjoying life in the mode of goodness, one day got the information that there was some guy standing on his tiptoes with his hands raised in the air for thousands of years, and there was fire coming from his head, so much so that it was starting to affect the heavenly planets. Soon afterwards, Hiranyakashipu emerged, and he conquered over all the planetary systems, and he subjugated all of the beings in the universe, except for Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Everyone came under his control. He controlled the seasons, he controlled the rain, he took over everyone's service. And he controlled everything because of his austerity, and everyone was kicked out of their jobs and subjugated. And Prabhupada mentions in this section that wherever you think you are that's safe in the material world, you're not. Because at any moment there can be an upheaval and everything will change. Whatever good period you have in this world will be then replaced with a reversal of fortune. So Prabhupada quotes Krishna's consistent advice in the Bhagavad Gita, which is be tolerant, because things are going to come and go and change. And the person who is wise, who's steady, learns to tolerate these things. It's a spiritual practice to tolerate. And to understand also that ultimately Krishna is in control of everything. Therefore, Brahma says in the Brahma Samhita that yastvindra gopa matavendra mahosa karma bandhan rupa palabhajana matanoti karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindamadi purusham tam aham bhajami. From Indra down to the Indra gopa, which is a tiny little red insect, comes out in the rainy season in autumn. Every living entity is receiving the results of their past activities, except one who is engaged in bhakti bhaja. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhaja means when you engage in the practice of worshipping Krishna, then Krishna is taking away your karma. Rupa Goswami confirms this by, in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, quoting from the Padma Purana, where he says, aparabdha palam papam kutam bijam palonmukam kamenaiva priliyante vishnu bhakti ratavana. There are many different stages of karma. There's aparabdha, which means karma that's going to be manifest soon. There's prarabdha, or karma that's already manifest. And there's karma that's in seed form. All of these forms of karma are destroyed, Vishnu Bhakti Ratatmanam, when one engages in service to Lord Vishnu. Therefore, one may ask, it seems as if devotees also get karma. Because I had ups and downs before I became a devotee, and now I have ups and downs even as a devotee. So what's that about? And as we were driving down from the Sadhu Sangha 2 days ago, we read the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th chapter, 8th verse, which is known to all devotees. Tate nukampam susumikshamana bunjana evatma kritam pipakam hridbhagvapurvir viridam damaste jiveta yomukti padesa dayabak. And that is Brahma's statement that no matter what happens to a devotee, he or she takes it as Krishna's special mercy. That Krishna's giving me a token of what I actually deserved to help purify me. And therefore, he takes whatever reversal of fortune comes as Krishna's special mercy. And anyone who situates himself in this consciousness and tolerates the onslaught of the changes of material nature becomes Sadaya Bhak, means the inheritor of the kingdom of God, qualified to go back to Godhead by this attitude. And in the purport, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates by saying, as sometimes it appears, that devotees are also subjected to the changes which might be said to be karma from past activities, but actually it's not. Because, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, sarva-dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tong sarva-papibhyo mukshai shami masaja. If you surrender unto me, you're no longer subject to the laws of material nature. And masujaha, don't worry. So what's happening? Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says what's happening is that although one has surrendered and is free from karma by taking shelter of Krishna, there's still a residual effect of one's activities in the material world in the form of a subtle desire to enjoy material nature. There's a residue left over. It's like if you burn a papadam and then you destroy all the evidence. And 2 hours later, someone walks in your apartment and says, who burned a papadum? So in the same way, even though the karma is gone, the residue remains. And therefore, Krishna gives a kind of his own medicine, knowing exactly in which way every living entity is particularly still desirous to enjoy the material nature in subtle ways. He gives a kind of correction through the material nature to make the living entity want to give up the last vestiges of desire to enjoy in the material world. And this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, technically not karma at all. It's Krishna's special mercy, directly given to the devotee to rectify the particular way in which he or she wants to enjoy the material world. Regarding astrology, Pradyumna asked Prabhupada, is it in our Siddhanta to rely on astrology? And Prabhupada said, no. However, if you know if it's know that it's going to rain outside, then you bring an umbrella. So we don't rely on astrology because of the fact that, first of all, your destiny is going to come one way or another. Also, Krishna is changing our destiny. But at the same time, there are some patterns that one can look at. And one can adjust one's attitude accordingly and moving forward in the process of devotional service, especially knowing by looking at any chart that there are going to be ups and downs, and then taking the advice of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever comes up or down, simply tolerate and go on with your practice of devotional service. So now we'll take some reflections or questions. Yes, Prabhu.
What would be the easiest way to explain free will?
What would be the best and easiest way to describe or define free will?
Free will to someone like a new person, like someone who doesn't know too much about our philosophy.
Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, I quoted the verse from the 8th chapter in which Krishna says, Bhuta bhavad bhavakaro visargo karma sangjitaha. And this is a very instructive point. It's saying the living entity has a free will, and therefore he's creating his own circumstances. Bhuta bhava bhavakaro. And Prabhupada describes in his purport to that verse that by the force of varied consciousness, a living entity gets good or bad situations in this world. And so people could appreciate the fact that they do have some volition. They get to choose certain options in this world, and that there are consequences to that. We also sometimes, in various settings where people don't have a wider context of understanding Bhagavad Gita or other Vedic philosophy, we describe how whatever we have in this world is subject to diminishment. Anything we have will be taken away. There's one thing that we do have that can't be taken away, and that is our choice of where to place our attention at any given time. So the most powerful asset we have, or I could say, the only asset that we have that we can call our own, which is under the banner of free will, is where to place our attention at any given moment. And this is how we create our future, in our decision from moment to moment where to place our attention. That's why Krishna advises in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhavamat Bhakto. Think of me, place your mind on me, meditate on me. The yogis, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sada, Pashanti Surayo Divipachakshuratam, Tad Viproso Vipanyavojab, Ribam Saha Simindate Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. They're walking in this world, but they keep their attention focused on the Parampadam, on the supreme goal. And that's the difference between a person who's floundering in the material world, being pulled from one situation to the next, and the devotee. The devotee's fixed his attention on Krishna and depends on Krishna. So I'd say that, you know, you can describe free will as our choice of where to place our attention. And that choice has repercussions. It's consequential. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhyayato Vishayam Pumsam Sangas Teshu Vijayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Kama Krodha Vijayate. He describes a sequence of events. Think of the word consequence. It means a sequence. Something unfolds, and Krishna says it unfolds beginning with where you place your attention. So dhyayato, whatever you contemplate, wherever you decide to put your attention and say, oh, I want that. Then there's a sequence, a consequence that unfolds in your life, and that's where you end up. You go with that thing. In fact, you develop a sangha with it. You look at something, it's just a thing. But when you look at it and you say, I think that's my thing. You walk into a store and someone gives you a pair of shoes to put on and they look at you and go, oh, those are really you. And you go, yeah, that's really me. They have stripes on it. I'm going to be cool. And then you make a sangha with the shoes and you think, these are my shoes, this is my style. And there's a whole series of events that take place when I invest my consciousness in something. So Krishna says, don't invest your consciousness in the material nature. Because bhuta bhava bhavakaro, it's constantly changing. And if you do that, then you'll be constantly changing with it. But just fix your mind on me, the unchanging. Prabhu?
I have one question.
Please.
In Mahabharata, they tried, Pandavas and all the good guys tried to avoid the war so many ways. And I think it was maybe Bhishma Dev or someone saying, destiny, we can't change destiny. If it's destined, then who can change it? I think many people in Mahabharata said that. So how we see, like Arjuna, for example, he could have, like Krishna gave him a lot of options, but then ultimately Krishna's like implying that's his destiny to do it. So how can we understand this?
Actually, what he said was in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, that if you walk off the battlefield and don't do your duty, you'll end up fighting somewhere else. Because that's your nature. And the whole point was that if you do what I say, then you'll rise above the modes of material nature. Even though it appears that you're fighting the war, you're doing something which is involved with the material nature, and so it's different because it's non-reactive, because you're following my instruction. The reason I suffer in the material world, you want to know the reason I suffer in the material world, is because I have my own plans. Krishna has a plan that's always effective and always comes to fruition. And then I have separate plans. And when I have a separate interest from Krishna and things don't go my way, then I suffer. Do you like it when things don't go your way? Not very much. When they don't go your way really fast, that's called a disaster. Like, you know, I built this beautiful house. This is a Bengali saying. I built this beautiful house for my enjoyment, and now it's burned to the ground. That's it. So I built the house. I invested in it. I had all these ideas of what it was going to be like. And then it just got smashed. Is that very nice? Not very nice. But that's because I'm attached. I always thought, like in California when there's an earthquake, everyone gets all upset, you know, the freeway fell down, the houses are all wrecked. And I'm thinking, well, if you didn't have a freeway or houses on here, you wouldn't even noticed. The earth would have just shaken for a while and you would have gone on with your life like the squirrels do. But because you have this big plan, it's like, this is San Francisco. It's like, what is San Francisco? It's a bunch of brick and mortar and like an idea about that you should pay $5,000 for an apartment every month. That's just a concoction. And then when everything shakes up, then he goes, I'm upset about it. It's like, upset about what? A concoction about what your life is. And material life is a materially conceived framework. And you think, this is my life. That's why even going back to the teachings of Hiranyakashipu, he said this idea of, like, here's my family, which is really burdensome, especially if you're from India, because I've noticed that you also have to take care of all your cousins. I never even knew a cousin. But, you know, you got first cousin, second cousin, third cousin. It's very entangling. But Hiran Kashipu said, all the family members, they're like people who came together at a roadside inn. You know, they pull their cars in, they sit down at one big table. People bring out some water to drink, and they're all drinking together, and then they start talking. It's like, oh, yeah, you work at Oracle, too. And then next thing, they all get up, they get in their cars, and they go separate. They go their separate ways. He said, there's your family life right there. You just came together for a few minutes in the middle of a, you know, vast cosmos, and now you're going somewhere else. But you think this is everything. Yasyatma buddhi kunapetridajuke swadhi kalatradishu bhauma ijidi. Krishna says in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam that people worship their homeland. They worship their football team. They worship their flag. And all these things are just a mental concoction. Because actually we have nothing to do with the material world at all. So my plan and my attachment becomes broken, and then I complain, but what kind of plan or attachment was it in the first place? It was inconsequential. So the Bhagavatam's telling us, don't become disturbed by these providential arrangements of the Lord. In fact, you find in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when Bhumi, earth personified, and Dharma are speaking together, that Dharma, who has been beaten by Kali, and then he says, actually, when Parikshit Maharaj said, who did this to you? Who broke your legs? He said, I can't name a perpetrator. And then Shukadeva Goswami points out, said, if you name a perpetrator, then you become complicit in the reaction. So Dharma doesn't name any perpetrator. It's happening because of unseen destiny, the hand of the Lord. And that's the attitude of the devotees. Yes, Prabhu?
Well, I'm sorry to continue that same discussion again, but I'm still not really clear. I mean, that's the reason I can really explain to many new devotees. But really, what's that fire between destiny and the actions that you want?
What's that?
The balance between, if something is destined, then what's the role of my free will? So that sometimes is a major question that can being going outside of the distribution, many people ask. And I really am not clear about it myself very much. So.
Well, once you get a particular kind of body, you're going to be affected by that environment a lot. Because in an analogy that is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's like you bought a ticket to go somewhere and you're on the plane. So if you're going, you bought your ticket, you got on the plane, which means like you already made your decision by, through your activities in your last life. And now, at the time of death, you're really helpless. It's not like you can order up a new body. That therefore in the Sri Upanishad you hear, Vayura Nilamamritam Atedam Bashvantam Sharinam Om Krato Smara Kritam Smara Krato Smara Kritam Smara. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes. Let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. The devotee is thinking of all the service that he did. And a materialist is thinking all the, you know, sinful activities at the time of death. And that conducts him to the next body. However, once you get in the next body, like you get on the plane, there are things you can do once you're on the plane, even though it's already sealed up. You're going from New York to Chicago on the plane. Once you're on the plane, you know, nothing can really stop you from like making a new strategic plan. Here's what I'm going to do when I land. Or you can make friendships on the plane, network with other people. Can you nowadays even make a phone call, you know, or you know, get internet and start connecting and doing what you can within the context of what you have now. But ultimately, the big game changer is what the Bhagavatam keeps saying over and over again, that whatever karma you have becomes mitigated by surrendering to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, don't try to individually untangle this because you can't do it. It's like when you're in so much debt, you can't get out of it, you have to declare bankruptcy. And that's what sarva dharman parityaja means. Krishna says, you're in so deep, you're not going to get out of this on your own. So surrender unto me. In bankruptcy, you take shelter of the court. They say to all the debtors, you leave this guy alone, we have another plan to pay you back. It's the same way if a person becomes intelligent and sees, I can't untangle this by myself, and just say, I give up. And so I surrender to Krishna, you take care of it. I'll just do your work, I'll forget my plans, I'll do what your plan is. That's surrender. And Krishna takes care of it from there. And as far as astrology goes, in the end of the 8th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says the yogis, some of them try to figure out when's the best time to leave the world so that they get the best destination. He said, but the devotees don't even think about these things because they're simply engaged in executing Krishna's order. And whenever he decides to take them out of the world, that's fine with them. They just depend on him. So that analogy of the airplane you can use when you're talking to people about, what is the scope of their free will, what they can use it for. Fact is, you can come back to the point about wherever you decide to place your attention right now will determine what's going to happen, even on a moment-to-moment basis. Whether you're progressive materially even depends on where you're able to decide to place your attention. Because where attention goes, energy flows. Yes? 10 seconds.
So my brother just asked me, one devotee was saying something and I want to confirm it. He said, at the time of death, of course, the whole life was in front of you, but if there is association with the devotee, then when that whole scenario goes, of their life, it kind of stops at some point because those are very important points.
Well, just all I could say is there was one of Prabhupada's disciples' parents passed away, and at the time when they were leaving their body, the mother asked, is Krishna with us now? And then died. And Prabhupada said that she attained liberation because somehow or other she was able to think of Krishna at the last second in her last breath. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Bol. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.